Thanks to the popularity of New York's Momofuku Noodle Bar, ramen restaurants are popping up all over the country.
So it makes sense that the Asian comfort food makes an appearance in downtown Syracuse, right? We introduce you to the flavors and owner of Kasai Ramen on this episode of the 315.
First, there's an app for streaming WAER Live, and then a different app for your podcasts, and then another app for just NPR. But the NPR One app brings it all into one place. You can access local news from WAER, national stories from NPR, and some of your favorite podcasts all in the same app. Download NPR One today, and make sure you set 88.3 WAER as your local station.
Welcome to the first episode of the 315 in 2019. I'm Kevin Kloss.
And I'm Joe Lee, and we're talking food on today's show. Actually, there are a number of Japanese restaurants in the area with a handful of them that have noodle in their names. There are just a few, though, that market themselves as ramen restaurants.
The newest entry into the market is Kasai Ramen, located on Walton Street in Armory Square. Neither Joe nor I have been to an authentic ramen noodle bar, so we thought it would be a good idea to check one out.
Nice atmosphere, brick walls. So we're down on Walton Street in Armory Square. Really nice decor, brick walls, nice wood chairs, black cloth table covers. Nice little bar area.
It is more spacious on the inside than you would think when you walk by on the street. You know, two levels of seating here.
Yeah, very narrow.
And the upper level, if you sit on the upper level like we are right now, good proximity to the bar, so if you need a refill, it's not too far to make your way over to get another drink. I really like the atmosphere in here, Joe. You're talking about the art and the brick. You know, we got some lighting in here that really kind of sets a nice atmosphere. Some dining. No, I like it. You know, it has a very friendly tone to it for sure.
We sat with the chef and owner of Kasai Ramen, Kyle Mastropietro, at the WAER studios to find out more about what makes Kasai shine down in Armory Square. We have Kyle Mastropietro, chef owner of Kasai Ramen, with us. So you mentioned that you come here specifically to open this restaurant?
No, I came here because I met my wife. And met she's from here.
And what were you doing before you moved here? Were you always in the restaurant business?
Yes, I was an executive chef of a hotel in Philadelphia.
Okay. And so tell us a little bit about the inspiration for Kasai Ramen.
I grew up studying Aikido with my family. My father studied it, my godfather, my brother. It's just kind of a family activity to do, you know, just get us out of the house, keep us disciplined, teaches a lot of self-control. It's really, really nice. You know, all martial arts is a good way to, you know, train not only your body but your mind as well. So I just got into Japanese culture. And then coming from Philadelphia as well, you have access to a little bit more of the ethnic cuisines than mm-hmm. you would in a smaller city like we have here. Even though we have a good selection here, it's a little more of everything. So I would frequently eat noodles in Philadelphia, and then in my trips to New York City, which I would take often, you just hop on the train in Trenton and you're there.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I stumbled upon a couple authentic ramen restaurants and just hooked.
So, well, Kyle Mastropietro, I'm assuming you're not Japanese.
No, I'm not.
Right? So was there a, because I can't say I remember any, or there are no ramen restaurants in Syracuse that are popping to mind. Did you see that there was a significant need and opportunity for
yes.
that?
Yes. Okay. So when I, you know, when I was in Philadelphia, I would travel to New York or even in Philadelphia, I could get ramen. So, you know, I started messing around with some of the recipes and learning how to cook it. You know, I was interested right away, watched every video I could, bought every book I could find. It's just kind of, I get kind of obsessive when I get into something. You know, I got into beer brewing. Next thing I knew, I had a 4-tap keg system in my house. And, you know, I was working with 15-gallon batches of all-grain electronic brewing set up. You know, I dive in when I get into something. Mm-hmm. I go down the rabbit hole hard, you know, whether it be woodworking or sports or beer brewing or
scotch and bourbon for me.
Yeah. Well, you're going to like the change in the restaurant coming next week, hopefully.
So talk to us about where the restaurant's located and the vision you had for the space.
We got super lucky to find the space. It was what was in my mind for this restaurant from the second we started thinking about opening. I mean, it's just gorgeous. It's two level space, one and a half really. It's just beautiful. There's a stage for, nice ambience music. Beautiful bar upstairs. We're at 218 Walton Street. So, I mean, it's Armory Square. You couldn't find a better spot. I mean, it's exactly what we envisioned. And I think it's what the city needed too. We're bringing something a little different than what's down there. I think we will bring some traffic into the city that maybe people from the suburbs or from the hill or, maybe they wouldn't have come into Armory Square because they're worried about parking or worried about traffic. If we can keep bringing more eclectic restaurants, more restaurants and a scene, like Pastas and the Hop Spot's doing a great job. Other restaurants are in the area. If we can keep working as a team and building up Armory Square and, people see that they're, American Reserve Clothing, that's a really great clothing shop, or, Vagabond next to us, or Marissa's, we building a really nice community down there. And that's kind of not only what we wanted as a restaurant, but also we wanted to find an area that had all these other draws into the city. If we can just keep bringing more and more and increasing the reputation, more and more people will come into the area, benefit us, benefit everybody else as well.
So when you talked about how you first started to sort of dabble with some of those noodle recipes, Technically, how different is this to go from maybe you're like you said, a chef in a hotel in Philly to now you're focused in on this Japanese style of cooking? Technically, how different is that?
Oh, my God. Totally night and day. And that's why I'm happy that I didn't just jump right in. I was in a hotel at my last place in Philly. I've also worked at, Irish pubs, French restaurants. My background is Italian, obviously. My family in Westchester has a couple restaurants. We've had steakhouses, Italian restaurants. One of them is still operating and doing very well, has been for years. But I grew up, I was 12 years old. My first job was a busboy in an Italian restaurant. I've just been hooked. I've tried to go and do other things, because the restaurant industry, it's tough. It's really hard. Luckily with Food Network and all that stuff, people have kind of gotten to look into what it is, sort of, but that's not even really it. With the great chefs like Ramsay and Bourdain and all these guys, have kind of given people a glimpse into what a chef's life is like, but it's still a lot harder than what they show. But, it's been a lot different, but I focused on this for years. I just didn't jump in like, oh, there's no ramen restaurants, let me open a ramen restaurant. We worked on the recipes. I've worked on my noodle recipe now for 5 years, and we're still constantly tweaking. Every day is a learning experience.
Yeah, let's talk as we ate there yesterday. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Food was excellent.
Thank you.
Let's talk about the depth of flavor that you get into your broth.
Yeah.
What goes into that? Without giving away any trade secrets.
There's
what goes into building is a very rich and silky, smooth flavor and texture to that broth. How long does it take? What goes into it? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's a dance for sure. One of the hiccups that we did have, I was speaking to you guys yesterday when we first did open, is and this also goes into your last question, the transition between Italian, Mexican, and all the other ethnic foods that I've dabbled with. The way the ramen is totally different is you think, oh, it's just throw some bones, some water, and some vegetables in. It's couldn't be further from the truth. I mean, you have to build those flavors. None of them are being built for you. So you have your main components of ramen, which are dashi, tare, the noodles, the broth, and then the toppings. So you're trying to you have to be respectful of each one of those and really figure out how you want to build that flavor. One thing that really surprised me when we opened, due to the business, how much broth we're going through. So I have these recipes that I've been working on. My show you recipe I've been working on for 5 years at least. And that's our most popular bowl. My batch recipe was bulletproof. I knew it. I could make it with my eyes closed. Didn't even have to think about it. Didn't have to look at the recipe. Well, all of a sudden, I'm finding out when I'm making 60 gallons a week that something's a little different. what the heck's going on here? And it triggered in my head, oh my goodness, I just took, you know, where if I'm making baked ziti, if I'm making it for 5 people or if I'm making it for 300, it's the same recipe. Mm-hmm. You know, you're just multiplying. You're just portioning differently. It wasn't like that for noodles.
And
I was like, oh boy, time to figure some stuff out real quick. Honey, I'm not going to be home tonight. You know, like.
And how long does it take to make one of those?
Our shoyu goes for about 16 hours. Wow. Our shio will go for about 16 hours. Mm-hmm. And then the tonkatsu broth will go for about 60 hours.
And what's the base?
Shoyu is a chicken and pork soup, bone soup, combination of the two, we use a shoyu tare in that, which is by definition it's a soy sauce tare, and then shio is a chicken and garlic, emphasis on the garlic. I love garlic, obviously. So that's a chicken and garlic broth, and it's used as a salt tare, so it's a salt based tare. And then tonkatsu also uses the salt-based tare, but that's a creamy pork broth. That's why you're going that extra day on cooking the bones. And then each broth has different bones that we use. So for shoyu, you know, the big emphasis is like pork neck and pork smoked trotters. You know, we smoke most of the bones before we put it in. That's why you're getting that nice dark color and that real rich base. I think you had the shoyu yesterday, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's how you're building all those flavors, you know, going an extra step, smoking your bones instead of just roasting them and throwing them in. You know, all that stuff is you know, how you caramelize your onions, if you caramelize them not in a broth. You know, every little step is going to have just this nuanced flavor. But what we're going for is an incredibly deep and balanced and complicated flavors that are just subtle. It's a tough dance.
As you're talking about the different elements to your menu there, thrown out a lot of words that I think maybe someone who hasn't experienced this type of food, they're hearing those for the first times. How much do you think, like, our community is sort of being cultured in this when they come into your restaurant?
Oh, it's a huge part. I mean, we took 2 days with our staff on training, on just menu training, mm-hmm. where it was basically me up there being a professor and just going over every single word, every menu, teaching them how to pronounce them right, teaching them the proper enunciations, you know, and making sure they just don't have the simple answer for the customer. So like when a simple answer, for example, is what's this base? Oh, it's chicken. You know, knowing that it's chicken and garlic, what chicken bones are used, how we prepare the product, and making sure that, you know, if Tom, my general manager, and I are walking around the restaurant and we hear something being told incorrect, you know, we teach that. It's a teaching moment. You know, we don't, you know, no discipline. Oh, you know, you're doing this wrong. You know, the famous restaurant stereotype. No, we're teaching, you know, and the second time we yell.
Yeah, Frankie was our server, mm-hmm. and I think she did a great job in presenting. Can you tell me about that special again?
It's the seared shrimp with the miso tonkatsu broth. It has the pickled watermelon radish and all the regular toppings that come with the tonkatsu.
My dish, the special I had with the shrimp yesterday, had, and I guess they all the ramen dishes have a six-minute egg in it.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that. It was a little struggle for me, right. Personally, because I just can't do runny yolk.
It's a ramen place, so I think I'm going to try some. The question is, which one? Now, they all come with a 6-minute egg. My issue is, I need my yolks cooked, so I don't know what a 6-minute egg.
Are you worried about runny yolks?
I don't do runny yolks. Yeah. I just can't do it.
But it didn't ruin the flavor or anything. But let's talk about some of those components that are in there that are important, that are staples of ramen.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of, when I was a customer only of ramen, I would judge online, basically. You know, like if I'm looking for a new place in New York City, there's so many, you know, you're trying to, you know, I don't look at reviews so much for that kind of stuff. It's, you know, when I'm living in a city, I go by word of mouth. And when I'm not in a city, I kind of take a look at pictures of the food. That's kind of what I'd like to base off. Reviews are so subjective. Mm-hmm. It's hard to take that as Bible, you know, mm-hmm. and, especially being a chef. We have a bit of a jaded view as to, you know, some certain websites and whatnot. We won't get into that, though. But, you know, so I'll look at the egg. And if I see a hard-boiled egg, I'm more than likely not going to go in there. You know, the traditional is either an Unsan egg or the 6-minute egg, and it's just you want that creaminess of the egg. You're putting into a, our broth is served at 190 degrees. That yolk is not staying runny for long. Mm-hmm. That's the goal. You want that egg to add. You want that creamy yolk to add into your bowl. So the first thing you do when you're supposed to, you know, your method of how to eat noodles, as soon as they're dropped off, you're supposed to take your soup spoon, dip it in, give it a couple seconds to chill, and really take in the aroma of the broth, try the broth, you know, and then you're supposed to take the bowl and just kind of get everything all mixed in together. You want that umami from the egg to really get into that broth and mix in there.
Neither of us had been to a real ramen restaurant, right? That's so it was it was quite a new experience for us.
Do you remember what's in the sauce?
Yep, that is the ghost pepper pineapple sauce.
Ghost peppers, that's what it is. Okay.
Pineapple kind of cuts it down, but it's still pretty spicy.
Yes, yes.
Now I'm going to try some of the octopus bomb with the pineapple ghost pepper sauce. I'm expecting a lot of heat. You're right, crunchy on the outside, and yes, very hot. Oh, yes, quite the heat. I would say if you are going to use the pineapple ghost pepper sauce, it's important to have a drink nearby.
Are you finding that to be the general case with here in Syracuse? Folks are coming in for the first time and really discovering and learning and and all that?
100%. That's why I said we're almost like a school as well as a restaurant. You know, it's what we wanted. I wanted to bring something that we're not used to. And it's not only the ramen. There's a lot of the izakaya menu that people haven't had. A lot of people haven't had shrimp moose puffs, you know, which is, we call them our blossoms. You know, a lot of people haven't had that.
What is that?
Well, we take a shrimp and we turn it into a mousse.
Okay.
A mousseline. And, you know, that's a...
So you're pureeing the snot out of this thing.
Pretty much, yeah. Turn it into a mousse, mix it with some herbs and some garlic and ginger and shallots. And then we roll it in shredded wonton. And so it gets like the spider looking. It looks wild. There's wonton going everywhere. And so it's deceiving because you have this, you know, crunchy wonton exterior. And then you bite into it and it's just light and airy. And, you know, it's an umami bomb. You know, there's flavors coming from everywhere. You pick up garlic and ginger and then the shrimp gets you. And it's like, whoa, what is going on here? You know, we serve it with sweet and sour sauce. So as you said, building depths of flavor. The whole menu is based around that concept.
That sounds familiar. I had the octopus bomb.
Mm-hmm.
You want to talk about that concept a little bit?
Yeah, that's just, again, it's my way to play around with, when I say people call us traditional Japanese and I get a little squeamish with that because that's not really what we're going for. Sure, we have enoki, we have, you know, 6-minute egg. We're using traditional-ish broths, but it's really our take on it. So on our website and our mission statement, it says, you know, traditional Japanese ramen with a Salt City flair. It's kind of, you know, a perfect example of that is the octopus bombs where we're doing, I mean, that's an Italian dish all the way. It's arancini. You know, it's fried risotto balls. You know, it's Italian as Italian can get.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of merged that with a traditional octopus fritter, which is a takoyaki. It's a traditional Japanese ramen restaurant, sushi place dish. So it's just kind of my take on it. You know, I love risotto. I love, you know, octopus. I love bombs. So I was like, hey, let me merge these two. You know, it's just kind of, yeah. I always joke with people, and you know, when they're, oh, this isn't traditional. It's like, I didn't buy a restaurant to do whatever, you know, I didn't open a restaurant to do what everybody else is doing. I opened a restaurant and took this risk, and you know, I'm shooting for the moon because I want to do what I want to do.
It's your expression,
right? It's my take on it. You know, we have Japanese meatballs on the menu. You know, it's another Italian hybrid dish. You know, but there's also ginger pickled red peppers on there and yuzu aioli. You know, which is, can't get more Japanese than that.
And, you know, while Joe was chowing down on the octopus bomb, I was starting off with the Kasai meatballs.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what I necessarily expected from your meatballs, but they were so good. Talk me through a little bit, because, you know, I feel like if you go and have meatballs at someone's house, everybody's got a slightly different meatball recipe. Like I said, without giving away, you know, the book on this, what goes into those meatballs, though?
Two words, duck fat.
Really?
No, they're seared in duck fat. So, I mean, that's another way that we're just trying to change, you know, what you would expect. I don't, when you said you got the Kasai meatballs, mm-hmm. my face lit up because when you said they weren't what you expected and they were delicious. That's what we want everything on the menu to be. You know, we just kind of want to, wow, every bite, whoa, you know, pickled red pepper with the meatballs. That's not.
They almost, because I sampled them, and they had a smoky, almost as if they were cooked in a wood-burning oven. Where does that smoky sort
it's
of
from how we cook it. So, okay. So we put a real fast sear on it with duck fat and some oils, and then we're cutting the heat. As soon as we get some steam, we're cutting the heat and throwing it right in the oven. So it's just a combination of how you cook it. And there's also maybe some ingredients in there that kind of will, when you cook them at that high temperature, I mean, we get that pan just ripping hot. There's certain ingredients in the meatball mix that tend to, when they hit that high heat, they get that caramelization. That's why the meatballs have that nice skin on them. It's not because we seared them for 20 minutes, because we flash seared them, and there's ingredients in there that we know will caramelize nicely when we hit them into that hot pan.
How long have you been open?
The 12th will be 2 months, so not even 2 months yet.
Brand new.
Yeah, oh yeah, we're stinking new, and we don't even have our liquor license yet, which will hopefully be happening this week.
You know, when we first got started, you mentioned that you had been a chef at that hotel in Philadelphia, mm-hmm. and you mentioned a number of other restaurants that you've been a chef at. As a chef, is this sort of the ultimate goal, if you will, opening your own restaurant, trying to put your own touch on what people may have sort of some notions on what, you know, Japanese food tastes like? Is this like the ultimate for a chef?
I think it's case by case. I know some guys that are, you know, their ultimate goal is to be a corporate chef and, you know, have that family time and have the stability, you know, benefits. But I know a lot of us, this is the ultimate. A lot of chefs don't get the opportunity to do it. I consider myself very lucky. You know, it's tough. It's not a fun business to be in. It's, you know, 16, 18 hour days every day. You know, you're missing out on family time. There's a lot of sacrifice, but the reward is just, you know, when I look into the dining room and it's, you know, full or half full, or there could be one table. As long as people have the feeling that we get when you have that smile on your face, and also just the artistic freedom has really been my favorite part of the restaurant so far, is being able to express myself through specials, and it's just been so rewarding. The last 3 years I did the corporate thing, I thought, you know, that's kind of where I needed to go. To be happy, and it just was the exact opposite. You know, at first it was like, whoa, these 9 to 5 hours, or, you know, my worst week is a 60-hour week, you know, or 70-hour week. This isn't so bad, you know. But after a couple of months and a couple of years, I found myself not being happy and not, you know, it's just like how I said before, ties it in where I've tried to get out of this business. You know, I went to college for elementary and special education. You know, I thought that's what I wanted to do, and it just, I could never get away. I tried working for a corporation and sales, and I always came back. You know, it's just, it's like, you know, a year or so ago, my wife and I were like, all right, let's do it. Like, you know, it's enough time, enough playing around. Let's make the jump.
Does she also work in the restaurant?
She does not. No, okay. She is a nurse practitioner.
Okay.
So she has her own.
So you've only been open for a couple of months. Mm-hmm. Have you gotten to know your customers yet?
And, oh, absolutely.
And who are they? Who's coming in?
It's, you know, it's surprising. We had a demographic where we thought we'd be. Obviously, the college students we knew would be a huge part of our clientele. It's, you know, we have a lot of, college has a lot of people from New York City, a lot of people from bigger cities. This is a restaurant that you would find in these bigger cities, honestly. It may be new to Syracuse, but this has been, I mean, David Chang opened the first Mamafuku in 2004. It's huge. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, he's, you know, huge inspiration of mine, and a great guy, and, you know, I've been lucky enough to spend a little time with him. It's just, you know, a lot of other cities don't know how good they have it. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't throw a quarter without hitting three ramen restaurants in New York City. I mean, that's really lucky, because each place is doing its own thing. You know, you can get a totally different bowl. There might be a tonkatsu on two restaurants that are within the same city block, but they're totally different, I guarantee you. Just because how tying into chefs wanting to express themselves through their restaurants, and, you know, it's going to happen in everyone. You know, it's just like every Italian restaurant might do chicken parm or eggplant parm different.
Right.
You know, it's just the way it's going to be. But the clientele has been great. You know, we've actually gone a lot broader than I thought we were. I knew we were going to have the college kids. I knew we were going to get the lunch crowd, you know, the young professionals and the downtown professionals. But we've been seeing a ton of families coming in. We've been seeing retirees coming in frequently and becoming regular customers. Our return rate is through the roof right now, which is great. And all this is being done without liquor, which is, you know, people say you're not going to survive without liquor, and we are. We're thriving without it. So I can't, you know, we're very excited to unlock the whole restaurant, because honestly, it's pretty much running at half capacity without liquor, because we have sake flights, whiskey flights, scotch flights, you know, a wide variety of scotches, a wide variety of bourbon, a wide variety of Japanese whiskey, Japanese vodka, Japanese gin, craft beer rotation. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that we want to do with specials with booze, and we can't right now. You know, it's kind of like handcuffing you a little bit, but
Lee, party of two, your table's ready. Hey, man, we appreciate you coming in and talking to us. I think having Kasai Ramen as a part of the restaurant landscape in Syracuse, I think, elevates the scene. Downtown is just becoming a lot more vibrant, a lot of places, different places to eat, different cuisines. So I'm looking forward to making a return visit.
Thank you very much. It's an exciting time down in Syracuse right now. It really is. It's really exciting between the arts and the restaurants and shopping downtown. It's just really, it's a lot of fun to see it grow to what it is.
You know, one of the things that I was struck by when we were there yesterday is from the street view when you walk by, it does not look as big as it is once you get in there and you see there's a bottom level, there's an upper level, way more spacious than I would think walking by on the street.
And the exposed brick walls, the artwork, the music, the jazz music that was playing, it really is a nice atmosphere.
Yeah, it's something like we spoke about, like you expect to see in the east side of Manhattan. You know, it's wild. It's a wild space, and the owners, the Fabiolis, they put in so much effort. You know, they spared nothing going building this place out. I mean, we have beautiful marble from their marble company, VT Verde. You know, they mine their own marble. You know, that's the love and the passion that went into. We built the banquettes in the building. You know, we did the floors. We tiled the floors. We tiled the walls. We, you know, everything in there, we didn't hire people to do. The landlord, his family, and myself and my family, we did it, all the work. I mean, it's just, they did most of it, honestly. I was working on trying to prepare a restaurant to open, but we did help out where we could. And it's just, you know, it's just, it's, you know, we're working with a local artist who is curating all the art. Every 3 to 4 months, we're going to have a totally new art show, totally new art exhibit. We're going to have release parties for that. So it's another way of tying in the arts and community, you know, which I think is really, you're seeing in Syracuse a lot of it. You know, the people I think who are going to have the lasting power and to really help this city grow culturally and you know, the art scene grow. Everybody's really banding together and putting us in. So we're featuring all local artists. All the artwork hanging is local. I think the furthest artist that we've used is in Utica. But they're all in this, you know, collective of artists who are working. And we're going to have shows, and you can purchase the artwork from the restaurant that's hanging in the restaurant. You know, and, you know, it's really great.
Very cool. Yeah, it was a good...
Yeah.
Yeah, that was good. Are you guys on social media?
Yes, yes. You can find us at Kasai Ramen on Facebook. Our Instagram handle is Kasai_Ramen. Twitter, same, Kasai Ramen. And then our website, KasaiRamen.com.
If this episode of the 315 made you hungry for some ramen, definitely check out Kasai Ramen. They're located on 218 Walton Street in Armory Square. The atmosphere is just energetic, and the ramen is fantastic.
And we want to thank Kyle for visiting with us today. We also want to thank our server, Frankie, who was putting up with our shenanigans.
Ghost pepper sauce included.
She was really cool. The staff there is really nice. To keep up with what they're doing here in Syracuse, you can follow them on Instagram at Kasai_Ramen. Want to thank our producer, or our associate producer, I should say. We just gave him an upgrade. Mark Giandro, for putting this episode together.
Get caught up on past episodes of the 315 at WAER.org and check out photos of our visit to Kasai on the 315 Facebook page at the 315 CNY. Thanks for listening.